Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
Okay.
Hey there, Beverly Hills 90210 fans.
You know how when they yell cut, they wouldn't stop.
That's interesting.
What?
Yeah.
If you were Donna, what would you have said?
I said...
A waitress rather call the police. And she was mistaken 90210 for
cops.
Along with your host, Charles Rosen.
Look at that. Dean Cake and Dan probably got the best performance he ever gave.
We're having a meeting here.
Oh, at least there's one person on this Fricata set that knows what they're doing.
Larry Mullen.
I had a friend named Craig Richland. There was still cocaine around and stuff. I always remembered him. And I just kind of thought I would honor my coke dealer.
Get out of here.
Pete Ferrero.
Here's what I learned. It's possible Claire would have gone out with me.
That was your takeaway.
So sit back and relax because it's like totally time for the Beverly Hills 90210 show.
Just hold on to me tonight.
Okay, here we are on the Beverly Hills 90210 show. And this is very exciting because we're being joined by Karen Rosen today. It's been a while since we've had you here on the podcast.
Hi.
Karen, how are you?
You know, I'm just getting over like 10 days of creeping crud, congestion, coughing, non-COVID something that I got from my grandchildren. So I'm just happy I'm here. And if I cough a little bit, you'll forgive me.
It's okay. It's the coughing's legal. Cursing's legal. There's nothing. Everything is legal on
Karen,
this podcast.
Do you know Brian?
I don't think we've met. No.
Hi. How are you, Charles? I don't
I'm
see
doing
your
great. How are you?
Head. I only see your face. Your there you go.
There you go. Yeah, is that better?
There we go.
A little bit.
There we go.
There's still a little face in the bottom of the screen.
Chuck, how's everything with you in the Venice area?
Well, we made real improvement on the house this last few days. Stopped raining, and we got ahead on that. So the leaky roof syndrome is, I think, stopped. So that's a good thing. And was on the beach today with the dogs really briefly before the podcast, knowing that, I'm going to look up tomorrow and Larry's going to be in Martha's Vineyard for months. So
it's very challenging when we lose him. I mean, we see him every week, but
and imagine how it is for the dogs, right in front of his place when we go to the beach.
One second.
Hey, Beverly Hills 90210 fans. Check out all the latest rad stuff from the Beverly Hills 90210 show shop. They have everything you could possibly imagine. So, like, go there now, okay?
All right, Chuck, let's go back to the creation of this episode because it is not normal. I shouldn't say normal, but it's a very difficult topic. We're talking about incest. What was it like to go to bring this up? I mean, you've talked about Jessica being a fighter in terms of like bringing some of this stuff out there. So
no, I just Jessica. The thing with Jessica is that nobody could talk as fast as Jessica Klein. When Jessica got wound up and she was telling you the story and she was talking, she would give a performance as she's telling the story. She's telling it well. She's there. There's no way that you can question anything going on, especially in this particular story, where right from the start, as we were developing the character Sue Scanlon, which is Scott's, the character who died in the gun accidents, younger sister, and we realized and I was remembering this, that one of my early pieces of journalism was about a stand-up comedian who had cerebral palsy. And what was the most interesting part of the whole deep dive into his character and his comedy was meeting his sister, and how the sister was kind of, you know, it was all for the older brother and getting that through. She was in a secondary. So the idea about here is this death that we dealt with one quick episode in about, you know, that we never really brought it up again. We never had a reason to. So to bring it back was a good indicator. And this was the deconstruction of it. So when Jessica pitched it to Mr. Spelling, at any time, especially in this particular episode, it wasn't Donna then goes over to the house for dinner. It was Tori went over to the house for dinner, and Tori does this. And Tori has the final scene with you know, with Luke.
Right.
With Luke, you know, with Dylan. And so, you know, I think he liked that because we were still developing her, you know, her character at that point and giving her more screen time than she had in previous seasons. So that was a ploy here to get. And Mr. As I was just, Karen and I were just talking about it, he had no problem with it. And because he had no problem with it, neither did the network. There was no problem brought up about incest. So just, I thought there was going to be, but I think Karen handled it really. We did our bases and she handled it really well.
The other thing that's going to be coming into this episode is the sister, Sue Scanlon. Do you remember creating that? I guess Karen created Sue Scanlon. This is the first time we see her?
Oh, no.
No, we have, they come up in the, because remember they have their senior buddies, Brenda has
right.
Sue.
That's right.
And,
so right from Steve being in the school, she was part of that.
A lot of
time. Yeah, so no, it was a whole arc. You know, we go back to school and we use them as seniors, you know, with, and so Steve had his with the computers, and this was, you know, hers, Brenda and Donna. And she really, I guess it was at a dance. We had a dance one night, and she was a little more, you know, really flirt. Oh, Home and Away, the one where that we did with that she was very flirtatious with David.
Do you remember casting her? Nicole Tom?
Yes.
She was great. I mean, she was very, that was a hard, very hard role, really. You know, very complicated.
And Karen, I found the scene that was cut between her and Mrs. Scanlon. I thought we'd wait till Jenny O'Hara joins us.
Okay, good.
It's kind of a, it's a scene that it was really good, but you didn't really need it given everything, all things being equal.
Yeah. So walk me through, we you know, Doug Emerson's character was killed off, and typically in television, that's the end of the family. There would be no reason to see the family again. They just went into the somewhere else in the box, in the TV box. But this is an opportunity where we get to see life after this tragedy at the school. So Karen, you wrote this episode, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we had both, Chuck and I had written the gun episode where Scott was killed. And we didn't, you know, enumerate the children, but there's also the one of the earlier episodes. It was the one called Isn't It Romantic, where Brenda and Dylan get together, their first romantic, the beginning of their romance in season one. And in that, Scott is having a dilemma that he can't sign. His mother doesn't want to sign the paper allowing him to go to the sex ed assembly where someone's going to come and speak about AIDS. And so that was a, and then, you know, and then he's saying he doesn't want me to be influenced at school. And David says, well, what, how are you influenced at home? Your parents have 8 children or whatever, however many the number was. So they were like a large family. And we had certain attributes for them that had been set up prior to even Scott's death. And then now with other things happening with the sister. But Jenny O'Hara was a gem. I wish she was on here right now so I could say, well, she's here. She, you know, she had really, really technically wonderful professional actress who could do anything and walk into, a drama with a given cast and fit right in as if she were one of them. You know, she just really could have emerged as anything we asked her to do, basically. So I feel like her reactions were kind of in line with what we'd set up already. And, you know, of course she delivers, but Nicole Tom was also very important, very important. And Bethany Rooney directed this episode.
I was going to bring that up. There's a thing that Nicole Tom has talked about, Chuck, that I'm curious about, that we've kind of talked about here a few times, that at some point Nicole Tom believes, as well as Dana Barron has said this, that they were all going to be a part of the next generation of Beverly Hills 90210. Dana Barron, Nicole Tom. This was in the time period, I think, when you were thinking of that Brian would not graduate with the rest of the class. Is that something that was a legitimate thing that was going to be happening, or just tossed around for a moment's notice?
Yeah, it was just a long toss around because it was just, you know, once Aaron, to cement the deal, required that they all graduate, it meant that we had to accelerate Brian. So whatever idea that we could have done and having, you know, West Beverly High remain or be, you know, still be a high school show behind us, that show would still be running. We'd be Degrassi. I mean, there was a lot you could have done just keeping it a high school show. You just would have started to.
Aaron would have liked to keep it a high school show with these same people.
That was the problem. But there was more high school, clearly more high school to do. And I even thinking of this episode from a style side of it. I mean, you know, the B story. Brandon doesn't want to dance. So why, you got a nice girlfriend? What's the matter with you? Why won't you dance? That really is a lightweight. That's, you know, Saved by the Bell could have that as their main storyline, right? It's just, yes. I mean, it's lightweight high school, which we definitely was the perfect balance to a story that was going to be about, you know, sexual harassment by a teacher. And it's interesting with, you know, the character when Andrea gets involved in this episode, and mostly she's just the snitch and causing trouble in this episode a little bit. But the one thing that is true is that we did have her with the teacher back in the day when we did the summer episodes with that guy, Mr. Suter.
There's always been sort of this odd, I don't know if it's odd, but there's this chemistry with Andrea and Gil Myers to begin with. And so she's very judgmental. She's going to constantly be in her head about.
He also came in. It was a weird thing because she was the former editor, he wanted to shake it up. He wanted to give it to Brandon. He liked guys. He was a little bit of a sexist in that regard. And she had to kind of adjust to that personality because whoever was running the paper prior, I mean, we knew that guy, but he had no real influence on them in the individual. Right, yeah. We weren't letting that character penetrate their lives in the same way that Gil Myers was. And did.
Absolutely. And there's some great stuff you mentioned that Andrea is sort of observing Gil Myers. She's observing the troubled Sue Scanlon in some of the conversations that he's having with her. This stuff is really well written, Karen. It's really, really great stuff. And I love how Andrea is suspicious, looking out for the girl, for Sue. Talk to me about writing some of this.
Well, it's always hard when you're trying to, you know, you want your hero characters to stay your hero character. So we don't want her to do a terrible, you know, unveiling of this thing, but we want her to treat us like we would want to be treated if we were Gil Myers. You know, we want her to be we want her to prevent harm if that's what's happening, but not cause harm if that's what's not happening. So that, you know, so there's always that balance with it, but, you know,
The other thing I took out of it, you know, thinking about it, is that there was, you know, the Gil Myers had this backstory. This, you know, a student, right, who did, you know, commit suicide, who was depressed, who thought it was love, and, you know, and he had to rebuild from that. And so this, you know, summons that up again. And it is something that, you know, that I learned doing this show is that, yes, you've got backstories for these characters. Use them. I mean, here is the backstory for Uncle Ernie. And, you know, the one thing that I liked about this, I was telling Karen that what I really liked seeing this all put together in the way that we just did was that, especially that last scene at the dinner table, how so much of it was unsaid. You weren't talking about the issue. You did have afterwards the scene with Donna and Sue, but you knew what the subject was going to be because of that table. And that was, and things weren't said there. Yeah. And it was very, you know, and I like that, you know, and television was always very much in the kind of television we were making, was you yak, 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 you're in the position, you know where you are, don't get lost, you know, here you are. But this was different. I liked it.
I was going to say that this could have been a 2-hour special, you know, movie.
It should have been. And it, right. I was thinking that. Yeah.
It's that, that is a lot of times the challenge whenever you're doing a serious subject in or complicated subject in an hour show, especially when you have a B and a C story too, you know, which we did have, which is all Chuck's doing, that, that organizing of how to structure those little connecting dots with Dylan and getting sick and the heel of the bay, the voting, and he got in the birth, you know, it weaves it through. And I did feel like, because of the time limitation in watching it now, I thought we're explaining things that happened off camera, you know, and we have to do that because we just couldn't have, you know, really, I mean, because so much more could have been done. You could easily have been a 2 hours. So it would have been, you know, more of a confrontation with the young
people. It would have been, you know what? And I'm looking at this scene again, that was that scene up, you know, like what happened at school today? And you really drill down until it's a very emotional scene. And, you know, and do you really, did you really need to know that? Or was the element of surprise, you know, preferable? And also, it one's moves the story, other takes screen time. So let's move right. The story.
Especially right. But I like the way we did the unknown result of what had happened in the room with Gil and the girl, you know, with the,
right. Like, yes.
Well, yes. Like that wasn't seen, but there might have been, like, and I also liked a lot where Andrea is making friends with her or getting her to trust her by sharing that she had a similar experience and she right. was so kind about it. And it's sort of like, I mean, I'm surprised. I didn't remember what kind of research I did for that, but obviously you'd have to do that, a gentle approach. Right. And something of that kind to do it. And maybe modeling a little bit how to treat someone who, you know, is in a situation, is troubled, is having a problem, and you want them to open up to you. And so you have to become vulnerable with them as well. That little moment where she says, what I tell you is not going to be told, and what you tell me, same. I kind of really like that, looking back on that, you know, because that is kind of like the basis of trust in a therapy situation, for example, or any kind of a thing where people do have to get vulnerable and reveal. Yeah.
A couple things here. Catherine West says, I just saw the Barbie episode again. Karen nailed it.
Some
people are saying, Lindy says, it's nice to see Karen again. Oh. Tammy says, hi, Karen. Always nice to see you on the show. Brenda, who's not Brenda Walsh, says, woohoo, Karen. Do you think Brenda Walsh would say woohoo, Karen?
Maybe Brenda would have.
I sent Brian to hopefully get Jenny O'Hara figured out.
That would be nice if it happened. But it would have been Brenda in seasons 1 and 2. That's the Brenda that we knew best.
Let's talk about that storyline that you mentioned. Dana Barron, Nikki Witt is trying to get Brandon to dance. I want to ask about this stance that Brandon has about not dancing. Where did this, is this a Jason thing? Is this just something that
absolutely. And it wasn't there in the beginning. If you look at the first 12 episodes, there was one, I think it's BYOB, when they're up in the hills, when the one who cracks the car. Now that was the 2-hour episode or the 2-parter. That's the one, because the difference between that one and this one, we built a character arc around the little sister that culminates with an understanding that incest was the driving factor but she's a guest star, and the mother's a guest star. The other is Brandon Walsh cracks the car, and it's Brandon and Jim. And it's the car. It's, you know, you know.
You're saying if the incest, if the incest was happening to one of the main characters, you could have explored this way longer in an episode. But because everybody's a guest star, well, what are we going to do? Another hour?
Our series was always, I mean, right from the start, when once we became a hit, everybody was teasing us about incest. Like, why don't we do a storyline with Boy and Brandon and Brenda, a couple, you know? We had a lot of that, you know, in this. And so they even teased it. You know, those guys would, you know, should they have gone on a date? What if they got attracted to each other? I think, didn't something like that happen in One Tree Hill where they became?
That might have been the thing. Yes. So Jason did not want to dance. Now there's an episode. I have a theory.
Well, I do. I think I know where it was. There was the episode we did East Side Story, where we did a really elaborate dance.
Very
the original
elaborate.
Writer of that, who was replaced on it, and I actually shared credit with that writer. That writer had a really elaborate dance number, and we kept that in. But we had professional dancers, and they all were doing great. And then he's got a dance, and he's dancing like Bad Surfer Stomp, and Jason didn't like it at all, and just said, "I didn't like it either."
Don't just make to be clear.
Dance again, Charles. And that was
he had to learn choreography. You know, he learned choreography. Like there was, it wasn't just dancing. It was steps. It was salsa. It was like a flavor to it. He looked awkward doing it. So I imagine that I figured that's where it all stemmed from. But anyway, in this episode,
yes.
He's got this beautiful girlfriend, Dana Barron, who is just so stunning and so cute and so fun on this show and sort of fits in because she doesn't fit in, right? She's sort of that person, Nikki Witt, and she wants him to dance and Brandon won't do it. Was there any thought of like he has to shake and move a little bit? He does in the room privately with her.
Yeah. Well, he, you know, the funny thing about Jason is he really was in the first year. He was just saying, I don't want to dance. Don't make me dance. Don't. And then he upped it each year. He upped it. I really don't want to do it. Really. So it was always a standing kind of a joke. But I sort of.
And then,
like,
you know.
And then, I saw course, him dance though in real life. I believe. I think.
When you went to a wedding, did you? Right. But if you went to someone's wedding, was he dancing?
I think so. He might tell me no. He might tell me no.
You know what? You know where I think I saw him dancing was that Christmas. Remember that Christmas party we had in Universal where the cast, with Gabby and the cast, gave away the car. Karen, when we did the karaoke, I got in trouble for the karaoke.
Yes.
Yeah. He was dancing at that party.
He was dancing at that party, I think. I can remember, maybe.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, I see him dancing. I can't place it. I'm going to have to think about this now. But
maybe it was Gabby's wedding.
I was thinking his own wedding, not the current.
Oh, the other one? Oh, the one that we went in the Buffalo Club. Yeah. The first wedding.
Simon says, I really didn't like how Nikki treated Brandon. The man doesn't like to dance, so watch. She pretty much terrorized him. She always did stuff like that on the show. I don't know if it was terrorizing.
she was giving him a hard time, but it just
trying to get him a little jealous a little bit. She with the bumping and the grinding. She was good. She would get down on the ground.
The Blue Lobster says, I was in fifth grade when The Next 50 Years aired. It was all my circle of friends were talking about that week, had a powerful effect on us, thanks to these incredibly talented writers.
That was very the nice. Gun episode. That
thank you, Blue Lobster.
Well, what about Dylan being sick?
Well, you know, we face that constantly. Well, I get little alerts on my phone. Quiet. That tell me ocean water use warnings, because we live in Venice now, and they tell us all the time which beach is safe to swim in, and it is a constant here. We have beautiful, beautiful beaches that sometimes you should not step foot in, and the surfers do get a lot of stuff.
And while we were making the show, 1991, that was the start of Heal the Bay, with a woman named Dorothy Green, who actually used our set our Beverly Hills Beach Club set for their first fundraiser. And I couldn't get anybody in the cast to come on a Saturday night to do that, to support Heal the Bay. It was brand new. Jamie Lee Curtis did it instead. But nobody from our cast. That was, you know, a little embarrassing. But nonetheless, so they had just started out because Santa Monica Bay, which is where I grew up in the water, and most LA kids spent their summers in the Santa Monica Bay at the beaches in Santa Monica. That was in the mid late 60s. By the mid 70s, they were all polluted. So right. This was now the 90s, and are we going to do anything about it? And, you know, Malibu was still reasonably clean because it was farther north, but Santa Monica Bay was not great. And so this was the beginning of that kind of connection that you get sick. If you're in the water all the time, you're going to get sick. Why does it have to be this way? And that the idea that the character of Dylan being an activist, it got him a little bit out of his, you know, he's just a sad rich kid with a troubled father, which is where we were certainly going to be going with the storyline with Jack McKay. And as we move down season three,
how are you, Jenny O'Hara?
I am really well. I'm just starting a new series for Hulu, so I'm pretty excited about that. I'm playing Ellen Pompeo's mother. It's what we don't know yet. Right now, it's the untitled Orphan Project.
Oh, amazing!
Yeah, and it's about this family who adopts a young little person orphan from Ukraine, and there are many doubts. Is she really 6 or 8, or is she 20? And is she homicidal or not?
That's the 21st century take. You would have to make it, is it a homicidal person?
Yes, of course.
You came into 90210. And I've said this to people, of the believability of guest stars and characters that came into this show, you brought so much authenticity to this character in a way that I'm not sure that other guest stars have. Like, I mean, they are all so good, but I buy that you're this mom. You know, I buy that you're Scott's mom, and you are this person. Tell me about you auditioning. Did you audition for this show? How did
I
you?
I auditioned for Scott's mom, and I knew Paul Wagner from before, and we had, it was a long conversation about my husband and his health at that time, which was pretty perilous, but it's fine now. Everything was fine, but it was really kind of shaky. And it was, the room was real, is all I can say. And it just, I feel so sorry for that woman.
Yeah.
She's such a monster, and she has not a clue in the world.
She's
trying to do a good thing, and she just.
What did you think when you read her?
I thought I understood her. I thought that she was really broken in some way, that she doesn't admit, you know, the perfect house, the perfect hair, the perfect clothes, everything's got to be perfect. And she doesn't see this boy. She doesn't see the reality. He is stuck in her mind in some lower adolescence. The fact that she would do that kind of a party.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So shocking and awful. And so humiliating to him and all the other kids who came, that she begged to come.
Yeah.
To bring friends.
Like Pete said, I mean, Jenny, that scene, every time I watched that episode, I physically cringed. You were that good. Like, the nuances, everything was just so perfectly done.
Thank you.
It's difficult to watch, really.
I haven't seen it. I would love to see it. Send me it if you can.
Did you know this woman? Did you know someone like this woman that you emulated or?
No, not consciously. It was might have been my first mother-in-law. <No. laughs> Version of that everything had to be so proper and in fact was a bit decayed underneath.
Right. I know you're very active in SAG with Gabrielle, so I feel free in saying this to you that the character room today would be on somebody that would probably work for the Republican National Committee.
Oh, baby. No heartbeat. And much not understand why anybody wouldn't love that odious man. But, yeah.
You know, definitely, you know, some extremism going on.
Going back, what was Doug Emerson like to work with?
Good. I mean, wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about the rest of the cast? How did they react to you?
Like they knew me, like I belonged there, like I was part of it. There was never any strain of any kind. It was just, and with the same with Nicole.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so easy and she was so good. So good in that.
Oh yeah.
I was
okay. Saying that, you know, her next thing that she did after this was The Nanny, and it was such a different role and it probably was, you know, it was more comforting. You know, this one put her into some dark places.
Yeah. Yeah. But she was really good.
Wolfie, are you there?
Karen, I know you had a few things that you wanted to say about Jenny's performance in this. You said that earlier.
She's just a pro. This is all you could, you know, we were this little show and she comes on and she's just showed them all how to do it. Honestly, we were all going, oh, thank goodness, an adult. And, you know, not that we didn't have talented cast and talented guest stars of every stripe, but right. Jenny stood out for us. And, you know, when the director turns to you and goes, ah, we're, you know, she's amazing. You just go, yeah, that's it. So I hope you've been having a wonderful career since then.
Yes, she's starring in an ABC television series. Wow. Just going on. It's untitled. It's so good. They don't know what to call it.
Well, there have been other projects called Orphans. So
I see. Yeah.
So they haven't settled on a name yet, but it's a great cast.
And who else is in it?
Alan Pompeo, Mark Duplass, a little person named, she's a Brit, Imogen Fields. I think it's Fields. And she is beautiful.
Where are you filming it?
We're filming it out in East Jesus. We're filming it in Santa Clarita.
So, it's still in Southern California, thank God. Yeah, I was ready to hear you say Georgia, New York.
No, jobs for all, Southern California.
Yeah, so something I do admit that. We always, I mean, that was a little rib we had between Darren and myself. Yeah, okay, you know, you got your own TV show, but you got to do it in Santa Clara. I'm still in the Spelling Building. You're going to go out there all the time, you know.
Oh, boy, I'm telling you, time of day.
Ooh. Oh, now especially.
Oh, yeah.
So when you left the show for the gun episode, did you think that you'd come back for anything, or was it just a guest star that you said, well, that was really wonderful? And
I thought it was a one and done. Yeah.
And so then they call you to continue the story. Right. What was that phone call like for you?
Well, I was delighted, of course, because I liked working with everyone and the writing is so good. Thank you, guys.
Oh, that was a big thing.
And it was a body blow for this.
Well, we tried to bring our characters back, you know, because we, as Karen just turned to me and asked, what, did we get character payments for that? And I go, yes. And we were very, us writers, we were very assiduous in that to find out who got what. And it was the writer who created Dylan McKay didn't stay with the show after the first 12. So we always got to every episode. He got a character and sequel payment because he wasn't with the show anymore. You
know? Oh, he must love. Who is that, Chuck? He must love that. He got the character payment.
Yeah,
he got the character payment.
Oh, really? Even if he didn't write another script, it's still a character.
You know, when you write the one where the character is born, it's
where a character is hatched,
where the character first appears, you've created that character.
Right.
Well, even if it was given to you by someone else.
Stephen Jess did Emily Valentine. They had Emily Valentine. Mm. I think we had Nikki Witt.
Probably.
Because you had it in the pair. It was, right in the center. Yeah, so we, we all got our
So then you guys definitely got Mrs. Great. Scanlon.
This is great.
We must have, but they don't differentiate that really when they. Yeah,
It's a one-time payment. So
you know, Chuck told you about the latest thing that they're not airing some of the best episodes right now.
Air the gun show.
They don't hear the gun show because of music issues. They redid the music because they had only gotten the first 5 years or something, and. They redid the music for the DVDs, which were a little late even coming out, and then they redid it again. It seems like they didn't use that.
Well, part. I don't know why, but I.
But now they've pulled the ones where they could not replace all the music, so they do have maybe a clearance issue. But they must have found a way to do it because. Oh, wow. But it's some significant, some of the best loved ones, where the music was right incorporated into it. So, but Chuck has friends over there because I think they're just kind of amazed that it keeps on keeping on, that it continues to show all around the world and people love it. And, and 30 something years later, which is very gratifying for us, but they're noticing, so they're saying, maybe you're right. Maybe we should fix that. So hopefully they will. Put them all back out there.
Blue Lobster 57 says the scene with Jenny and Brian, where she was trying to get David to take Scott's things. This is in the gun show, was powerful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we could feel Mrs. Scanlon's grief and David's discomfort through the screen. I totally agree with this assessment.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recall shooting that with Brian?
No, but now that you mention it, into my mind.
Cowboy hat.
Oh dear God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trying to get him to bring people to the party and the decor of the party. Just awful.
It's so something because the dancing, when the whole cast finally does show up on the set, you could feel the excitement. I mean, when they were all gathered together to come to this party, then you had the exact feeling that Scott must have had of excitement. He must have been over the moon to have all these cool kids. And then they danced so good.
That's one thing I wanted to say to you, Pete. You were saying about with Brandon dancing. We were talking about that before. He wasn't in that scene. But, both Brian Austin Green and Ian Ziering are great dancers.
I mean, so Brian's they both phenomenal.
Really enjoy dancing, and they're in there dancing. And Shannon, Shannon loved to dance. She was in the club. She was a good dancer, good dancer. We didn't do that much dancing with her, but when she did, she was great. And Jenny could go along
all of
too.
Them. Yeah, it was really fun.
But really, those three were the Brian, Ian, and Shannon. Were really good dancers.
I loved watching the show. I loved seeing everybody. And I thought Gabrielle was so wonderful.
Just she really was. Wonderful. She really was.
Yeah. Let's move to this episode. This is the episode that we're looking at is the presumption of innocence. This is the incest episode. Right. So you get the call to come back. You read the script.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be going dark. We're going a little bit darker, obviously. Well, I don't know if it's a darker. It's as dark, probably. Incest.
Dark.
Different. Yeah, it's a different shade of dark, perhaps. what did you think of this when you read this?
I thought, oh my God. Oh my God. This woman. If she ever comes to any kind of reality, would want to open a vein because what she has missed in her family is just stunning. And as I recall, she was very religious. And I thought maybe, that was not a help.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, she was strict, didn't want to sign the paper to go to sex ed class. I mean, a little character reveal
thing.
Yeah,
it was a whole,
And then her daughter has to change her clothes, what she wears, but when she comes home and goes out, which is what my friends had to do, and some of my friends with very strict moms in the 60s,
You would have the clothes that you were going to wear.
Yeah, you roll up your skirt after you left the house, et cetera. But it always stemmed from the child's point of view, from the kid's point of view. It was always an inexplicable degree of supervision, and that's what she kind of illustrated there. But missed the tragedy.
I wonder what happened. What was the outcome of that?
Well, I think
did she take on her brother, or did she? And I don't think it happened to her with her brother, but it might have happened to her with her father. And she is a woman who has no husband, basically. He's just checked out. He's never there.
He's on the road, yes, because I got to be somewhere else. I think of a couple that we knew at children, our children's age, and the husband who's remained a friend of ours. But in the course of that marriage, he was, found a way to be out of town as an attorney all the time because he didn't want to do it. And then we knew another family where the guy was in New York, same thing, and it just spells trouble when there's too much separation in a relationship. So I really liked how you just laid it in there, Karen. Oh, he's always on the road. Your character, oh, he's always on the road, meaning the husband.
About the moving.
But in terms of the molestation, it just is. I mean, it's always you. This is a little different because it's the uncle, so it's not a full time thing. But when you hear about it with families, that it's oftentimes, or at least the way it was depicted, I often think of that groundbreaking television movie, Something About Amelia, which was with Ted Danson, who just was amazing in the part. But the idea that you're in the house, and so the spouse knows what's going on and chooses not to,
right,
or doesn't know how to, or whatever the cause is. But this is slightly different.
Well, because she is moving her daughter back into that situation.
Yeah, they're not going to move. I think that they stayed and that she got some therapy.
I hope so.
Mrs. Beasley recommended somebody, and the uncle.
Mrs. Beasley, that's the way we're spelling it. Teasley.
Teasley.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to attempt to show a scene. I don't know if this is going to work.
Okay.
But let's see how it plays out. Share sound. Oh, please. You guys see this? Do you guys see?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Okay. Here is an awkward dinner.
Heavens, we have Henry here filling in, guarding the homestead. Why don't we put on a videotape of the ranch?
Then no, I don't think she's at all interested in our home movies, Mother.
But we have those terrific horse shows, and we have Scotty jumping.
I don't want to see Scotty jumping. Scotty is dead.
I have to apologize for my daughter. She hasn't been herself since that nasty mess with that disgusting teacher.
Do you have to keep talking about it?
Seems to me that you were the one who talked about it first, weren't you, Sue?
Yes, I was.
So if you started it, well, then you ought to finish it, don't you think?
Henry.
I'm sorry, but I don't believe I ever got a clear explanation of exactly what that whole nasty mess was all about.
Henry, for heaven's sake.
All I've heard is a lot of talk about how he tried to seduce her, tried to have his way with her. I want to know exactly what she's saying he did. What she did to make him think he could make such advances.
What are you talking about? Sue didn't do anything.
Is that right, Sue? You didn't do anything, huh?
No. No, that's not right at all. I was the one who tried to seduce him.
Susan!
It's true!
Wow.
What did that mean?
Okay. Really powerful stuff.
Yeah, that was the dinner scene.
Yeah.
Killer.
we I have to
understand why he was boring in on her.
Right. I mean, the gall for him to bring that up, you know, to really? Try to get information out of her.
Really?
Also, you know, if you think of it, I mean, it's a variation of a power trip, and you're going to hurt somebody and ruin their lives by saying what happened. You better be truthful, because he's deep down, like, trying to cover his own ass, I assume. Yeah. That's how I interpret it.
That's how I interpret it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
But there's a perverse quality to that kind of thinking, because you're dealing with a guy who's molesting his niece.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's about to molest the younger one. I'm absolutely sure of it.
Right.
Oh, that had either started or was going to
start. Oh, what a piece of shit.
That was just the undercurrent. Yeah, there.
In that moment that comes up. Yeah, no, exactly.
We talked a little bit, Nicole, about Nicole Tom somewhere here in one of the streams. Let's talk about her again. Jenny, you working with this young actress, she is so, we just watched a scene where she is so powerfully talented and really in this. What was she like for you?
Not terribly close in terms of off-screen relationship, but I think I worked with her before, though. Before possible. That, I think we did something. I just watched her. She was really good.
Yeah.
I thought she was so alive, so centered, and so, you know, overused real.
Mm.
There was nothing theatrical.
I agree.
About her. That she just let stuff come up and up and out.
Yeah.
And it really remarkable in somebody so young.
Mm-hmm.
There were no histrionics.
Karen, what did you wrote this, and you wrote the words for Nicole, and then you see it. She nails it, I think. What did you feel?
Totally. Yeah, totally. She did. I'm thinking, and my reflection now is that was very difficult work for her to do. Really a difficult part, you know, to do well and to have, you know, exactly as Jenny's saying, to not draw attention to it, not make it more than it would otherwise be. If she's not emoting, you know, acting out. She's just very present and real. It was, you know, very authentic kind of thing.
It was a really trusting
performance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She didn't have to jack it up in any way, make it extreme in any way. She let it drop down, 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 deep inside. And she took her time in that scene.
Mm.
And she was let to take her time in the scene, in the editing and in the
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, and that was Bethany Rooney who directed it with, you know.
Let's mention that, Chuck. Talking about Bethany, where is this her first? Where is she in? How many episodes had she directed previously to this? Was this her first go?
Oh, or? No. Well, she had some other ones. Bethany had a good started a career really, really right from the start. Remember, she was the you know, involved with the people who did St. Elsewhere.
That's right.
So she had been involved with that show and another things in different, but I met Bethany. She had a different name, and she was a script. She was Bruce Paltrow's script typist.
Oh, wow.
So that's Gwyneth Paltrow's father's script typist.
Yeah, yeah.
She did that as a sidelight. So those years were doing a lot of television movies, and I had a script typist, and she got ill or something. And I don't know, someone, all of a sudden, Bethany is, in whose name was, she was just Beth then. Beth was doing the typing, and she was great. So when she became, it was her and one other. So Bethany directed the third and fifth episodes of fourth and sixth. She did the fourth and sixth episodes of 90210.
Of the first season.
So, you know, the first 12 was golden. I mean, Dan Attias didn't come on to number, you know, 8.
Right.
And, But it was just, you know, early on, and Bethany, just a leap of faith that she could do it. And the other one was Artie Mandelberg. He had done Moonlighting, you know.
And then we got Nancy.
And then Nancy Malone. Did you ever do an episode for Nancy Malone, Jenny?
No, I never did.
She was. Do you remember Bethany?
How many episodes were there of 90210?
The total number that Mr. Spelling did was 298. I was there from up to the first 143, and we did that in 5 seasons. So we did 6.5 years of television crammed into 5 seasons.
My God, and you remember all these directors? I'm really impressed.
That junk mind memory.
It was junk mind, and when you're a one hit wonder, you know, you just kind of there's some, you know, they went on for 5 years after me, but you know, I think that the high school years, you know, as I said the night I left, you know, you can't take that away from me. So I got those years. You're dealing with these years. Yeah. I got these years. Thank you very much.
Chuck, you had 5 platinum records, essentially. The first 5 seasons are platinum records, sold the golden era of 90210 is your era. So it's not just, you're not a one hit wonder. You have 5 albums. Yeah.
Well, we really did not expect to be talking about it this many years later.
No, that's for sure.
And really didn't even discover that we had fans until, you know, many years later after I left.
Jenny, do you remember the director of this episode, The Presumption of a Presumption of Innocence, Bethany Rooney?
I do. But I remember her because I worked with her once again. So I don't. I don't remember on that episode. It was all kind of fast and furious.
A long time ago. And also, I really appreciate that you reminded me, particularly that it's something that I did know at the time and even subsequently, that your relationship with Paul, because that was like the good housekeeping seal of approval. Paul says, as an actor, I want to be working with, you know, and it was,
Paul
Wagner, who we're talking about.
Yeah, what a good guy.
Then inevitably what happens in this episode is that we get Donna and David to the house to, because this is, look, I think actually Mrs. Scanlon slams the door on someone's face. She shut the door.
Andrea, yeah.
Which is just lovely. And then, but she does trust Donna and David. She loves David.
Yeah.
And she reveals all this about Oklahoma and whatnot.
Terrifying. And to make that decision so fast, just get out of town. Nobody will know. Don't face it. Don't deal with it. Don't anything.
Yeah. And we get to the reveal that she reveals that there's incest happening with the uncle. It's really well shot. I thought that direction was really, really how she kind of sort of focuses in on the uncle as it's about to be revealed. For Karen writing that, the ending of this saga, do you recall that? What did you think as you watched it back?
You know, as I watched it back, I was thinking, I sort of want to see the uncle suffering somehow. We're missing that slap in the face to him. We sort of want him to get a little more upset. That was my current reflection. But like I said before, this could have been a 2-hour movie. And, you know, he is not one of our main characters, you know. So more important to have the mom, you know, and Nicole Tom, you know, have Sue than the uncle, but he's the, you know, we just have to kind of be implied what happens to him and that she's now believed, et cetera, et cetera. So I kind of wanted to see that more, but that really wasn't our show. You know what I mean? That really wasn't, we're not a procedural and, you know, like that. So, you know, took a little.
I found it interesting that he didn't suffer enough, apparently. Arrogance was.
In my mind, he suffered afterwards.
Yes,
it was a commercial television show. You have to sell time.
Yes, true. Well, but he didn't get the little sister, in my opinion.
I will agree when Chuck and I watched it back. I did feel like there was a piece of the story missing. Like there was a scene that we should have seen, not necessarily that we needed to see the explosion of Mrs. Scanlon yelling at this person, but that we needed to have consequences. You know what I mean? To some degree. And I did feel that that was the only thing. And that's why when you said, Karen, that it could have been a 2-hour episode, I was like, I would have liked at least another 10 minutes.
Right. And the judge just looked at that. He looked at the script. He pulled it out and he found that a scene that isn't, that we did not see today, which is when Mrs. Scanlon.
I was going to ask you about this, Chuck. There's this missing scene.
It's when
that
she,
Bethany Rooney cuts.
Bethany yes, cut it.
They cut it. And basically, it's just reviewing almost, you know, the
it wasn't with the uncle. It was just with the mom and mom, the mom getting it out of her that something happened.
Something happened at the high school.
You know, oh, I see.
And I you know, always thought and well, you know, the one thing is about doing the show the way that we did before it became more serialized was that you never knew when you were watching our television show what the tone of the given episode is going to be. Is it going to be really romantic? Is it going to be it going to be humor? Is it a social drama? Is it, and you know, that that kind of not being so fixated on the formula of what would be. Yes, it was an A and a B and a C, a comedy runner or some kind of runner, you know, that we would put in, but not the tone of it. And so, you know, this was a tone that was not one that was going to be, you know, necessarily expected. And it was, you know, this is coming after the weekend of Home and Away, which had to do with the gun accident in the other gun show that we had when there was a gang violence in the dance and they were coming to the dance. And it was basically what would happen if Dorsey High School would show up at Beverly High? And that was basically what Chip wrote. It was his Chip Johannesson, the Emmy winning writer. That was his first credit. So that happened right before this one. And after it, what episode was, to prove the point, the next episode was something called Destiny Rides Again, which I don't even know what that one was. I'm hearing Donna go to talk to the Catholic priest. That's probably the reason I don't know that one. And then Rebel with the Cause.
Stay away from that stuff, believe me.
Yeah, exactly. I don't need that one. Rebel with the Cause. I think this is where Steve gets busted for his you know, the computers and stuff like that. So more, you know, just different tones on each one. And that became, you know, real important to us.
That
we wouldn't be that just differentiated.
It felt a little truncated to me.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of implied, you know.
An abrupt switch. But then I thought, yeah, they're going to, that would be a lot longer.
Yeah, it would be. And you know, the important
thing.
And
you just have to trust.
You had to trust from the focus, you know, from the point of view.
Yeah.
And, you know, what Andre is going to think and all of that stuff, you know. And that Gil was resurrected. Gil, the teacher was.
The teacher was resurrected. And here's the other thing, that the last song that you play is Marvin Gaye singing What's Going On. And Mercy, Mercy Me. And if that doesn't bring you some kind of comfort, then if you don't know that everything's going to be turn out well, we always did that. You know, I mean, as fans of the show know, certainly of the podcast know, that every about 5-6 episodes, I get a call from a network executive pitching me a plot line. Why don't you have a mean girl? Why don't you have a bad girl? Why don't you have a escort to be one of your kids? Because they wouldn't be friends with my kid. That wasn't what we were, quote unquote, selling, and didn't want it. So then Melrose got all of those problems.
That's a fantastic
one. Chuck, you referenced this missing scene. And again, it's just all that it is just Mrs. Scanlon talking to Nicole Tom's Sue Scanlon.
Yeah.
About what Gil Myers supposedly did. Is that essentially what the scene is?
You want to read it? You could be Mrs. Scanlon, I'll be Sue. Here you go.
Put the tape. Okay. Mrs. Scanlon. Why, Sue? That is the one question I have. Why?
Why what?
This is not a game. I want an answer.
I don't know what the question is.
I think you do. Mrs. Teasley called.
Oh, so you want to know why I'm such a royal screw-up? Well, I'm probably... the hospital made a mistake when I was born. I must have been the child of some pathetic Looney Tune while your baby was accidentally given away to...
Stop it. Just stop it now.
So what did Mrs... Oh, that's you.
That's you.
Oh, that's you. See, that's a double. Oh, so what did Mrs. Teasley say?
She said, I should talk to you, have a heart-to-heart. And here I try to just do that, and you mock me.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean it.
What happened to my agreeable little girl who loved school and took pride in her work? This failing in classes, this cutting school, this isn't the Susie I knew. Well, maybe your father will have better luck getting through to you when he gets home from picking up Uncle Ernest, is how it is. Uncle Ernie at the airport.
I said I was sorry. I don't know what you want from me.
I don't want anything from you. I just want you to be happy. What happened, Sue? We used to be able to tell each other everything. And now she's crying. What is it? Can't you talk to me at all? Am I such a horrible mother?
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Let's see.
Something bad happened, but you can't tell anybody. Please don't be mad at me. You have to promise.
What could be so terrible?
You promise?
Sue, did this something happen at school?
And off Sue's tortured face.
So that would have made
hands across the board.
It was love. It's really
actually done. You too.
Improv. She studied improv. She studied improv with Bryan Cranston.
If someone says to you at this new Hulu show, I need two actors, do this scene. You know, oh, yeah. I know
absolutely.
Two.
I know who
an
to
older couple. Exactly. Perfectly.
Come separately or as a set, either way.
No, but it's interesting. That's a very interesting scene. Chuck and Karen, after hearing it, do you feel it's needed in this episode?
If I was playing Mrs. Scanlon, I would, because I would want her to be like not an evil witch, because I want her to be really, really a person. And so this shows a side of her that's a little more, you know, bewildered and trying to do it and trying to have the heart to heart. And, you know, she but you can see why the daughter is scared of her. But it does give her her human side. I guess it's not needed, you know, as in terms of, like, again, if we don't know this aspect of her, she's a little more one-dimensional, right? You know, if we don't know that she actually cares and is just bewildered of what's going on, doesn't know how to deal with an adolescent girl, you know, which many, many people don't. Adolescent girls are...
Brian, you're a super fan. What do you think? Do you think that scene's needed?
I think it works. Cutting it works, and that it helps the whole, you know, adding to the mystery. Did Gil actually do it? I think had they added this scene more, they added this scene, it would have convinced the viewer, okay, yeah, Gil did something. I think cutting it kind of helps with that mystery. Like, is Gil really innocent? Did he actually do something? I think if you added the scene in, people would have been like, oh, yeah, Gil did it 100%.
Would weigh it more on his side a little bit. I was trying to show, like, how... she had to say something, but she just couldn't bring herself to, you know, say the real thing. And
so is this something, Chuck, that Bethany cut before Jenny even got the opportunity to perform it? Or did she do this scene?
I don't think I did the
scene. Oh, you know what? I went to the white pages. I went to the original draft to look it up. So that's when, so I figured, but there was, you know, a lot of times, you have to do runs or change the page of colors.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But you know what I take particular pride in, and why we were so is still there. No, so it was filmed. Karen got it. But what I really love about it is, and it was why our show ran on time, is that Karen turned in the shooting script on August 25th, 92, the shooting script, meaning the one that gets distributed. And we were still doing revisions on it 9/17/92, just, you know, and what they were changing names or different things. So, you know, so in other words, that our scripts came in
over two and a half. All these versions is what he's pointing
at. But we came in 2.5-3 weeks early always.
Oh, yeah.
Directors never had to wait. Were their scripts. They were always there. They were there before. They were worked on before they got there. So that
that was really essential to Chuck, and it really turned out to be a huge help to the whole production, which was, you know, only 7 days, not 8 days for a full
hour. The show I did before this one was with Northern Exposure, and my friend Josh Brand, I'm leaving now, Sicily, Alaska, to go to Beverly Hills. I said, Josh, what do I do? I mean, when a show, what advice can you give me? And he had, because he had many shows over the years, saying Elsewhere and Amazing Stories and Northern Exposure, of course. And Josh says, just don't make, production is a motherfucker. Don't make scripts your problem. Mm. And we got to get ahead. And that was, when we never were, only one time when we changed, when Mr. the guy who created Dylan left the show, did we ever go into a prep period without a script. In 143, we always have the script.
Lindsay says, "Wow, thanks."
And so you can focus on it that way, and you know, performance and other things, and good casting and good stuff.
Lindsay says, "Wow, thanks for sharing that deleted scene. Great job, Karen and Chuck. So interesting to hear that after all these years. So providing some insight that we haven't really heard." Chuck and Karen, do you know any Mrs. Scanlon's?
Yeah,
we know of some.
Well, not as with the same. You know, we live in Venice, California. It doesn't necessarily have the same fervor.
Yeah.
You know, some of our neighbors here, but yeah, I think there were some people that you know were really and you know surprisingly shifted and became very rigid and unhappy and. I think we know one or two of those.
Yeah, we know a few.
The thing about this mother that was so interesting to me, seeing the episode, was that her denial was so complete. It was so complete, but it was gentle. It was proprietary. Soft. She was soft-spoken. She was trying to be fancy.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, Jenny, you have to wonder, I mean, something must have happened to her as well when she was at that age. For her to get to that point where she is like this, just in constant denial, something that's must right. have happened to her as well.
Right, to know to push back on, to know to push back on.
And I think also that she probably had tremendous difficulty with Scott's death, right? And having that be, you know, it had to be hard. So you have to, she really had to be excellent at compartmentalizing
her. A lot.
Absolutely. Wash it down and not, because it's stunning mm-hmm. that did not appear to have any deep effect.
When she's saying, oh, we can watch him and stuff like this. But
all
she has
the wonderful things that happened in this house.
Right.
Talking about movie.
Oh, I know.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Yes.
Memories.
No. It was completely erased from her mind.
Even the barbecue itself, the spectacular barbecue that they love having, and they're having another barbecue and everyone's making like nothing ever happened. Like
Right. Yeah. Donna even says, Donna says, you know, I can't believe it. I think she's talking to, who's she talking to? Either David or Andrea. She's like, I can't believe this. People are acting like nothing's going on. Everything's perfectly normal.
Right. Yeah.
What was the time span, do we think, between Scott's death and the...
At least a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, just about. I mean, I think it was the gun episode, and this is episode 14. Yeah, so about a year.
Yeah.
In that regard, enough time for everything to calcify, you know, for sure.
More than a year, probably. Yeah. Exactly.
The character is super powerful. You did an incredible job with this, Jenny. It's funny. My sister does not watch 90210, and she married someone whose mother, I mean, I'm so sorry to put this out there, was very much Mrs. Scanlon, and to the point when my wife first met her, she said, "Here comes Mrs. Scanlon." Yeah, but we told my sister inevitably about that reference, and she knew who Mrs. Scanlon was because it is iconic, and it came through the work that you did in this.
No, but also it's because people who didn't. It's true about everything you say in terms of that and the nature of the written, how you caught a person. At the same time, my experience with 90210 for those first years was that it was like people didn't want to acknowledge they had ever watched it. So they would come up to me on the playground. My kids were in elementary school, and they'd come up to me in this playground, which had a lot of entertainment fact people in it and stuff, and say, you know, I saw your show the other night. We're surprised. And they wanted to tell me that they really liked it, and I appreciated that. And then they went into incredible detail about what happened and who the characters were. I'm thinking to myself, this isn't the first time you've seen this television show.
Exactly.
Stop pretending.
My sister was a closet 90210 watcher for sure.
I think my first mother-in-law was also a good model of this. She sacrificed her children to her husband, in a sense. And I met her, and I went out to their house in Oyster Bay, and we told his mother that we were about to be married, and that we were engaged, and we were very happy. And he went into the kitchen, and she said, "Well, Jenny, I'm happy for Dora, but you know, I feel very sorry for you." And I said, "Really? Well, you have to understand, Dora had a terrible childhood.
Mm.
Wasn't raised well, so that's bound to leave some scarring." A torpedo right up her nose.
Have you gotten recognized all these years? All these years?
Who said that? She said that, or you said that?
Jenny, I said that to her.
Yeah.
Oh, I said to her, "Well, you have to understand, he had such a terrible childhood."
I love that you said that to
me. I did too.
I love that.
So pleased with myself. I'm happier.
The reason I think I became a writer is because I would think of things to say like that to someone like her, but I didn't have the courage. Okay, I'm going to put it in a script. I mean, seriously, at 1921, those early years.
You'll steal that one later. It's all right.
It's very good.
Very, very good.
I thought it was perfect.
It was. Exactly.
Did you get recognized as this person?
Yeah.
Are you a mother-in-law at this point? Or do you have kids?
Yes, I'm a mother-in-law. I have two daughters.
Was there anybody who was like, "Uh-oh, here comes Miss Scanlon"?
I don't think so. No, quite the opposite.
Okay, that's good. Exactly.
You have to remember now, Pete. No, Jenny is Doug's mom for King of Queens.
Oh, yeah.
So they know her now.
Yeah. Right. If we don't ask, people have sent a lot of messages to make sure that we ask you about that. So if I don't, I feel like I'll be upsetting someone. So what about that show?
Oh, I love that show. I love doing it. It was it was interestingly isolated. It was a boys' club.
Yeah.
Jerry Stiller, I had known from New York, from Broadway shows and stuff, and we all had the same press agents, our shows, so we were all doing these chicken dinners together constantly, and it was really fun, and it was delightful to be with him. They did an episode where we go out on a date that was very sweet, and it was just really nice. But yes, I'm known as Doug's mother. I was in New York. My mother was an iconic off-Broadway theater producer. And she took in kids who would come to New York and they wanted to be actors, they wanted to be directors, they wanted to be writers, and they didn't know what to do or how to go about it. And they came to her theater, and if they had no money for an apartment, they could sleep in the dressing room till they could get a waiter job to get some money. Wow. Going. And if they had projects, they could always audition for anything, and then their plays were done, and it was a remarkable thing. But somebody, it looked like, was trying to get into her third floor apartment, and we called the police, and they came, and we're down there in the lobby giving all the report, and suddenly one of them looks at me and says, "Doug's mother." Yeah, Doug's mother. Yes, I am. I'm Doug's mother. And then afterwards, I would notice if I was ever walking by a police station and there were some guys, cops hanging around outside, somebody would say, "Hey, Doug's mother." Because the show is on 24 hours a day. Oh, and the cops, they watch it. They like it. The guys.
Still on. It's still on. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still going.
Brian, do you have questions from Reddit?
I think we've pretty much covered everything. Well, there was one question for you, Jenny. Had they I think somebody said, had they made another episode, you know, another continuation of the Scanlan saga, would you have been willing to come back?
Sure. Absolutely. Please. It was the best. It was the easiest. I can't tell you. Terrible, terrible dilemmas in it. Awful things happening. It was the easiest thing to play because it was so well written.
Very nice.
We just roll with it. Show up and be real.
I have another one here, Brian. Nuramino? I don't know. This is the person that writes down everything that we do.
Yes.
They wanted to know, did you notice a difference in how the show was run or its popularity between your season 2 and 3 episodes?
No. No, it was pretty consistent as far as I could tell.
Yeah. Okay. Chuck, Karen, anything else on your end to talk about in this episode? We talked about so much in the previous stream and now we've talked about a lot in this stream.
Thank you, Peter, for doing this because it's a pleasure for me to see Jenny again. And to go back and, of course, to get compliments is always nice, but it's really a fun thing. And it's a big chunk of time, you know, that went by in between. And to have those little cells wake up again and sort of remember, it's stimulating. So it's wonderful. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Really. Thank you for having me.
It's really wonderful to have you. Good seeing everybody here. We will be back next week where we'll stick to just one stream. And
but if you can get somebody on. Oh, my God.
This has been great. Thank you so much, everybody.
Okay, bye.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care. For prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.